This episode of The Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable. All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. And here's what I've been doing. I have been going back into, I would say, the first 3 years of the Nine Finger Chronicles, collection, right? Year one through, you know, I've been doing this for 12 years now, roughly. I'm going back and I'm trying to dig through some of the names. And today's guest, Travis Glassman, you popped in my head a couple weeks ago, and I was like, dude, I enjoyed talking with this guy. I know he's still hard at it. And so Travis, man, welcome back to the show.
Hey, I appreciate it, Dan. Yeah, I haven't been a loyal follower just because I've been so stinking busy, and we talked about that a minute ago, but
yeah,
I just don't have as much time to podcast. But anyway, yeah, I'm a big fan of yours, Dan, and appreciate all you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely, man. So man, it's been like, what do you think, 5-6 years since you've been on the podcast, man?
I think so. That sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think when we were initially talking, you know, and you would come on and talk about your hunting stories. And I think we even talked turkey, and we talked some mule deer, and we talked some whitetails. You had some young boys at the time. And now we fast forward 5-7 years, or I don't even know how long it's been. How old are your boys now?
Yeah. So I have a freshman in high school now. They just started last week. So he's 14. And then I have a 12-year-old. And he's in sixth grade. And then I have a daughter who's 7. So
okay.
Yeah, they've grown. And that's been interesting as a dad.
Yeah. So. Yeah, man, I'll tell you this. It's, you know, I say this all the time, right? I get these Facebook memories, especially right around school starts, where a lot of it's like, oh, back to school, first day of school. And then it's me just like holding my daughter for her first year of preschool, or me, you know, holding my boy for his first year of kindergarten or something like that. And it makes me sad, dude. I'm just like,
oh yeah.
Oh dude, time has just absolutely flown by, and life is so busy. You can't even like, it goes by so fast. You don't even have time to stop and like really remember, let it soak in enough so you can go, oh, I remember that. And I don't. That's how fast time's going for me.
I agree. Yeah. My wife does a really nice job of doing the before school photos every year. And of course, you get the reels coming through of the memories, and same feeling hits me. And I'm like, man, like I wish I would have, you know, stopped and sat down and soaked that in a little more. And maybe it's just a good lesson for me now, and for everybody on the podcast here to, you know, take it in if you can.
So. Oh, dude, it's so important. Yeah, I just want to like, I'm glad that I was sitting down last night at football practice for my youngest boy, and I was so thankful. Like, I miss coaching football, but I don't miss coaching football. Like, I was able to sit down and watch him. And I wasn't having to do anything else, just observe him. And I'm hoping that I can do a lot more of that in the near future, where I have a little bit less responsibility. And so shout out to all the coaches who continue to coach, because I'm still coaching baseball, and I'll do the fun things with my kids, like take them to the batting cage and take them to wrestling practice and things like that. But outside of that, it's just awesome to slow down and just kind of watch your kids grow up a little bit.
Yeah, I enjoy coaching, and I have some experience with some college baseball back in the day. And so I do coach our little travel team, and we did the 11U team last year. And of course, we're transitioning them to 12U this year. Anyway, we have a good group of dads where, you know, we can hand them off to the next set who are really good at football or basketball. And so I'm the baseball guy. And so I completely feel what you're feeling as far as like being able to relax a little bit, because we just passed them off to the football guys and they're now starting, and I can just roll up, drop my kid off and come back, maybe watch a little bit and go take care of a couple things in town. And so it's really nice to coach, but it's also really nice to sit back and relax and enjoy it as well.
Yeah. Yep. Are you still living in Western Kansas?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, man. And I think what really intrigued me about you initially was you live in an area of Kansas where there's that rare crossover of whitetails and mule deer, kind of like Western Nebraska, all the way down to Oklahoma. And I'm sure Texas has some mule deer in the northwest corner as well. And so I want to talk a lot about that today, and living in such a unique part of the country where you're able to hunt giant whitetails and giant mule deer. So I want to talk a little bit about that. But before we do, I got to send a huge shout out to all of the partners of the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. If you're looking for a badass broadhead, go check out wasparchery.com. I do have a discount code NFC20. If you've never experimented or have read up about how ozone O3 can distort your scent profile in the tree stand and kill bacteria and odor on your clothing, then go check out ozonixhunting.com. Some of the best optics in the game, Vortex Optics. I mean, anything that has to relate with hunting, whether that's a rifle scope, a red dot, a binocular spotting scopes, Vortex Optics has it all. Check out their VIP warranty, vortexoptics.com. Code Blue Scents, real and synthetic deer urines, the scent elimination products like body washes and deodorant, laundry detergent, and then you have the Rope-A-Dope mock scrape kit. Go check out codebluescents.com, discount code NFC20 for 20% off. If you're looking for a new AeroRest, and in my opinion, it's the best in the game right now, you got to go check out Vapor Trail Archery. That would be a limb driven, like I use the Pro V limb driven system. I can beat the shit out of it, and it absolutely holds true. I'm really hard on my equipment, and so when my equipment holds up to the way I hunt, even better yet. So vaportrailarchery.com, go check it out. Last on the list, but not the last, whatever. It's last but not least. There you go. Reveal trail cameras. They've just introduced the new 4.0 trail camera. The battery life is holding true. I've had it up for a while now. Really good battery life, really good trigger speed. The images that they're capturing and coming through the platform are really, really good. I personally don't even run an SD card on my camera anymore. It's all online. So go check out tacticam.com/cameras and read up on not only the new 4.0, but all of the newer accessories that go along with it. So thank you very much to all the partners. All right, Travis, the last time we talked, right, you had young kids. I don't even know if your daughter was born or not. If she did, it was maybe a brand new baby at the time. Yep. How has your hunting life changed in the last 7 years?
So definitely in the last couple, it's more focused on, what I can do to set myself up for success. But now it's how can I get my kids, one, out there, and two, in a position where they can be successful.
Yeah.
My oldest son, he shot a turkey with a crossbow. Mm-hmm. And then he has not shot a deer at all. He's my golf kid and my like sports analyst kid. He's very analytic and he's not as outdoorsy. And so he kind of slowly faded away a little bit. Of course I always offered to take him, but then my middle child, Archer, he's my 12-year-old boy. He's definitely taken to the outdoors, and I actually just bought him a new bow like 2 weeks ago. And we've got him sighted in out to 15 yards. And I told him, I said, until you can prove to me that you can just keep hammering that target at 15, with groups, we're not going to set another pin past that. And I think we're getting close to ready for the 25-yard pin. But he's only pulling like, you know, 26 pounds or something right now.
Yeah.
And he's left eye dominant, and it's kind of awkward because he kind of does some things right handed. So he's having to learn how to draw a bow left handed.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, a vertical compound for him. And so everything's going well as far as getting him set up. But anyway, he shot his first deer last year with a rifle in Kansas. It was a whitetail. And so we've been able to kind of get him out there. He shot a turkey, this spring. So he's kind of getting the bug now. Finally, I've been waiting for one of them to do that. And I wonder if my daughter isn't going to be one who really wants to go and do, and, she's not old enough to kind of really take out for a long, long day. So it's just been short stints, but anyway, it's been different as a dad. Of course I don't have near as much time, as I used to do all the things. I mean, of course I get out and put cameras out, and I did that, probably the second week of August, which is later than I like to do it, but we've got cameras out. I've got several reveal cams out there, doing the work, you know. I can't be out there checking, you know, pulling cards all the time like we used to. So thankfully, thanks to Tacticam, they're able to kind of hook me up, you know, through this time of year where I can't be out there. So constantly sending me photos and taking inventory right now. Our youth season actually starts on the 5th of September, and they can actually, there's a short time where they can use, any weapon, if they have a tag for it, of course, and they can go out and rifle hunt during that short time in youth season in September. So we're hoping to find something mature for Archer coming up here in the short time. Mm-hmm. So
you, like I mentioned earlier, you live in that crossover period where there's mule deer and there's whitetail. Do you have to have a specific, because for example, North Dakota, I can get a deer tag, and on that deer tag, I can shoot whitetail or a mule deer. What is the rule in Kansas for that area?
Sure. So if I get an archery tag as a resident, I can get an either species, either sex archery tag, and I can just bow hunt and shoot either one. Mm-hmm. So like if I'm sitting and I decide I seen a mule deer bed down and I want to go after him, I'm going to go. If I'm sitting in a tree and a whitetail walks by, same thing. Now, for a rifle, even as a resident, you have to apply and draw a mule deer tag. So the rifle tags are limited for mule deer. For a non-resident, they have to also, like even for archery, they have to apply for like a mule deer stamp or mule deer portion. So a lot, and even a whitetail tag is draw only. Even for archery, for out of state or for a non-resident. So it's obviously easier to get a mule deer tag as a resident, but it's still difficult. I say difficult. Probably every few years you'll draw a tag for a rifle for a mule deer.
Yeah.
But if you're an archery hunter, you just go hunt.
Yeah.
For either. Yeah.
Yeah. Now what about for the kids? Is there different rules for kids, or can your boy go out and shoot a mule deer?
Archery, it's the same rules.
Okay.
So even a kid has to apply for a rifle mule deer tag. So they're just very limited on those. But if they want a bow hunt or crossbow hunt, they can shoot either one.
Gotcha. Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about maybe the mule deer. Let's start off with mule deer. Back, I think the first time that we talked, mule deer were kind of, they're around, they're not as heavy as they, you know, as other parts of the country. There's way more whitetails in your area, but there's still some mule deer. Talk to me a little bit about if that's changed or not, what the mule deer populations are like and what you're observing.
Yeah. So I think the last time we talked, the mule deer were at my all time low in my career. And for whatever reason, I think it was a chronic wasting thing. Most deer that got taken in during that time frame were testing positive for CWD.
Okay.
So it really took a toll on the mule deer herd. Now it's going through the whitetails, and I've got so many places that were just absolute amazing funnels for whitetail. And what used to, you know, 10 years ago, I would get, you know, over a nice water hole in the middle of an awesome drainage this time of year in August, you put out mineral for photos or whatever, and you're drawing in, you know, you might get 100 pictures a night per camera. And now I'm lucky to have like a handful of photos total, and most of those are not mature bucks. So the whitetails have really taken a decline out here where I'm at. I think it's better on the eastern side of the state, and I think that they've kind of rebounded from some of that disease. But right now, we are just really struggling on the whitetail numbers. Now, on the positive, the mule deer are slowly starting to come back. The numbers are getting a little bit better. And I think, you know, whitetails tend to push mule deer away. They just seem to be more dominant. They seem to kind of push them out of an area. And so we saw a decline in mule deer when that, when our whitetail numbers were way up. It just seemed like they just weren't in this area as much. Anyway, now that the whitetail numbers have kind of faded a bit, the mule deer seem to be on the increase a little bit. So actually the last two seasons I've taken mature mule deer. So, there just hasn't been a good mature whitetail buck that I have wanted to go after or even is available, just because what I'm seeing is, talking about disease, from what I understand, what I've read up on it, it's kind of in the herd, and it doesn't sometimes affect a deer until they get to, you know, past 4 years old, say. And it seems like every year I'm getting photos of whitetails that are a nice 3 year old up and comer. I want to give him the pass, even at four, if I decide to pass. You know, I'm hopeful that I'll see him at five or six, and I'm just never seeing those big mature bucks. So for whatever reason, it's just taken out mature deer. And I don't think it's only bucks. I think mature does obviously too, but yeah, it's, I would say mule deer are a little bit better than last time you and I talked, but whitetails are definitely down.
Yeah. What are the, like the wildlife biologists and the state agencies saying about this out there?
So chronic wasting disease is definitely, kind of what the, what they're coining it as far as what's been happening. I did see a change in the amount of mule deer tags that have been allocated. And that's a good thing. I mean, we even had surveys for all of us hunters, to take when that 5 year period, 5 years ago, when you and I talked, when they were at such a low, you know, we would get a survey asking like, hey, what are you seeing? Do you have any suggestions? Are you willing to make a change as far as how many tags are out there? Or, you know, I even answered, you know, I would be willing to not hunt mule deer for 2 or 3 years just to let them kind of come back. Now I don't, they never did, you know, stop the season of course, but they did bring, you know, the tags allocated down. So I think it helped. But as far as like the recent stuff out here west, I haven't seen a lot of new articles on that, but I think that they're aware.
Yeah. So it sounds like between hunter observations like yourself and state agencies doing their reporting and their due diligence, it sounds like the culprit is potentially CWD.
Yes. I think that's most of it. I really do. Yeah.
What about like, man, you hear, especially in the Western Plain states, right? Everybody knows that they're very susceptible to drought. They're very hit or miss when it comes to rain throughout the year. And and I didn't understand that was normal until I actually went out there and I realized how dry it is, and talking to the locals, and they're like, hey, listen, this is normal for us out here to have it be this dry. Have you guys had any like outside of the normal ranges of weather over the last handful of years that may have also impacted these deer herds?
Well, it's definitely, this year has been the best rainfall year we've had for probably the last five.
Yeah.
So I think that drought does play a part in it. And I think some of it is because whenever you have fewer water sources, you have all of the deer focusing on those. And if there's disease there, then it's going to be transmitted among the herd easier. So when there's obviously more water sources, they're spread out more. And if there is disease, maybe they're not coming in contact as much. So anyway, yeah, we've seen droughts. This year, thankfully, we're kind of climbing out of that, and it's more plentiful as far as feed and water. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would say drought definitely does play a part in what we've faced.
Yeah. How do you change your hunting strategy? Well, here's the weird part, right? I'm not necessarily just locating deer for myself anymore. I understand, like, okay, the numbers are down. I got to go find a deer for me. Well, not only are the numbers down where you're at, but you're trying to help locate for a couple other kids too, maybe some friends, maybe the wife, things like that. How does your strategy change when you're dealing with a lower quantity of deer?
Water for sure. I mean, that's the focus. Anytime you can put a bunch of cameras, you know, on trails to and from water, that's going to be a big deal. Anytime there's good feed, if you happen to have a low area where, you know, maybe some of the crops are doing a little bit better, you know, of course the deer are going to focus on that. But yeah, it's really difficult. Like right now, the challenge that I'm facing right now is can we find enough mature deer for everybody in my family to take one, and do we feel right about doing it? You know? So like a mature deer, I still don't have a problem with taking, just because they don't get mature that often. You know, history says, you know, it's really difficult to get a deer up to 5 or 6 years old. So, if we can find them, we're going to take them, but
yeah,
they're just fewer and far between. And it seems like I'm having to buy more and more cameras to try to find anything that's worthy of taking, you know, because I really don't want to shoot a 2 or 3 year old deer right now at all.
Yeah.
So
are you that guy then that is okay with eating your tag if you can't find a mature buck?
Yes, I am for sure. They've brought back a lot of the doe tags too. And so, you know, it used to be like, well, I'll just go shoot a doe if I want meat. And we do enjoy venison, and we do eat everything we kill, or we have family members who also like it, so we share and whatnot. So, but yeah, I don't mind at all just eating a tag if I'm not going to take something mature. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I live in a much different area of the country than you do. I have a lot of cover. Right. That cover just holds more quantity of deer, I'm assuming, than what you got going on in Western Kansas in a lower cover, different cover type of state. And, I feel like if I shoot a 3 year old, there's a chance next year I'll still have a potential 5 year old. Now that math doesn't add up per se, but that just, you know, that just kind of tells everybody that how much in my area deer recycle through, you know, even mature bucks, like, oh, he may not be here. There may not be a 5 year old to hunt this year, but I'm confident that I can locate at least one, in, you know, next year when it comes up. But with that said, it seems like even in Iowa and the style of hunting and the access that I have, that is even becoming harder to find these days. And so I've kind of changed my hunting style to just be really flexible and be whatever comes my way. If it trips my trigger, then I'm gonna, you know, I'll throw an arrow at it.
Yeah. My focus has definitely changed over the years. And I used to be an antler snob, you know, to where, oh, he's not going to hit 160, you know, I'm not going to pull the trigger. And it was a status thing. And I was doing it for the wrong reasons, in my younger career as a bow hunter. And, you know, now I look for one, is it going to be a good experience? Am I going to enjoy, you know, the hunt? Is it going to be, you know, everything done perfectly the right way, as far as like, I mean, I always do that, but like, is it going to be a great story? Is it going to make me be fulfilled as far as like what I'm getting out of the hunt? Can I share it with my kids? You know, I'm not looking as much on inches as I am in experience. Yep. So I've kind of toned back a little bit on some of that. And even the age part, you know, I'll take a buck that's, you know, 135 inches, that's an 8 year old, over a, you know, a 155 4 year old, because I think that 4 year old might get bigger next year. You know, I'm getting to the point where I'm enjoying just watching and appreciating nature versus, you know, trying to go shoot a deer for a status thing, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, we've all been there. Right.
Yeah.
And most guys would be lying if they said they hadn't. Mm-hmm. You know, there's been some, you know, there's been times in my life where I just wanted the biggest buck in the woods, and sometimes I got it and sometimes I didn't. And, and now I kind of just more go with the flow type of deal. Right. And, and just really understanding that the joy comes from the journey, not the trophy shot at the end, you know, when I wrap my hands around the antlers. Okay. All right, all you whitetail nut jobs, it's hunting season, and that means football is finally back. College kickoff is here, NFL is right around the corner, and my bookie is where I'm placing my action this season. Whether you're in between hunts or just checking lines from the tree stand, my bookie makes it stupid simple to lock in your plays. Plus, new users get the bet back bonus. Sign up with promo code SE, opt in, and your first wager is protected. That means if it loses, you get it right back, no questions asked. Head to MyBookie, use promo code SE, and get in on the action today. Bet on anything, anytime, anywhere. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Nathan and Sons, makers of Underbrush Remineralizing Gum. I started keeping a pack at my desk for after lunch, and honestly, the chew is so satisfying. Most natural gums turn to mush, but Underbrush has this incredible texture and natural saps that hold up. My favorite is the spearmint. It leaves my mouth feeling insanely clean without that artificial fake sugar taste. Plus, Nathan and Sons makes it from scratch in Northern California using the same mineral that your tooth enamel is made from. It's such a great habit to get into because it supports remineralization and freshens your breath all at the same time. If you want a simple daily upgrade for your teeth, head over to nathanandsons.com and check out why Underbrush Remineralizing Gum is right for you. Right now, you can get 30% off your first order when you subscribe. Visit nathanandsons.com today. You live in a state, or you live in, number one, Kansas, not a ton of trees, right? Different parts of the state may have different, you know, cover. Even where my uncle lives in southeastern Kansas, not a ton of trees down there either. And you even live way further west and northwest, if I'm correct, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it's even way less trees there as well, correct?
Correct, yeah.
Okay. So talk to me about, like, how the deer are using terrain in a flatter environment, in a environment with no trees, where these whitetail are hanging out and where these mule deer are hanging out, and maybe just walk us through some of that.
Mm-hmm. So seasons changed everything. Yeah. So right now you have, you know, standing corn. Our standing corn in Northwest Kansas is not nearly as tall as your standing corn in Iowa, but we still have 6 foot tall corn or seven. And that's where the majority of the deer are going to be hanging out. A lot of times they're going to be finding a nice, you know, low spot or drainage in a cornfield. They're going to be bedding all day. They're going to be stepping out on the edge in the evenings. They're going to be working their way toward water, maybe out into an open prairie to feed on, you know, the green grass or whatnot. So any time they have cover over their head, they're going to be picking that to bed this time of year. As the crops come out, the deer, you know, I'm talking whitetails first. So the deer are going to, transition to any drainages, any, out of the way, away from roads drainage that they can get hunkered into. You know, there's not a lot of them. And so that's what I'm focused on when I'm hunting is, you know, those out of the way drainages, or maybe it's the back corner of a section where, you know, a fence comes together and there might be like an 8 foot patch of tall kochia weed, or, you know, you've got to think outside the box when it comes to cover with these deer. Now mule deer, you know, a lot of times they like Milo fields. Those are probably, you know, 4 foot tall right now, and they like it to where when they stand up, they can see out, you know, even this time of year, but then when they want to disappear, they disappear. They also bed in corn as well. But I found that the mule deer seem to like the Milo a little bit better. So as far as whitetails moving into, you know, after the crops are out, you know, they really like bedding in big open CRP fields, especially if they have terraces in them. And we have terraces, you know, for you, I'm sure you know what those are, but they basically keep water from draining off of a field that has a little bit of slope to it that's not perfectly flat. And so anytime you have natural terraces, it, of course, it creates, you know, undulation in the land. And so they're going to be back behind a terrace or in the bottom of a terrace because there's more thick grass there than there would be on top. So CRP, fence lines, any drainages that you can think, and any thickets. Yeah, we just don't have near as much brush as you do in Iowa. But yeah, that's, I'm basically trying to find any high point at all. Sometimes I'll do like an observation tree stand and look over an area knowing that I probably won't take a buck out of that tree stand. It's just more just to find a way to get up off the ground for glassing purposes, or I'll find, you know, I'll find something to climb up on, whether it's an old windmill or something like that. So,
yeah, absolutely. And so does that, so basically it sounds to me like when you're actually locating, trying to locate these animals, you're just trying to get as high as possible and glass as much as possible.
Yeah. So I'll start like this time of year and I'll just cast a big wide net with trail cameras and they don't move much at all. And you're just hoping to be somewhat in a, you know, close to their bed where you can get a rant, you know, if all I need is one picture. And that'll tell me, like, if I find a good mature buck that I want to target, then at that point, I'll pull a couple other cameras that are not producing and I'll bring them in and I'll just surround that area and I'll try to figure out, okay, where's, what's the closest spot to his bedding area? And then once I get that figured out, then I find a vantage point and I do behind the glass scouting. So I'll basically just keep, as you can see, narrowing in. And then once I have a pattern, not only with the camera, but also with behind the glass, watching it in a morning or an evening or multiple, then that's when I try to figure out my ambush spot. And basically either just sit and wait. You know, this time of year, the crops are tall, like I said, so you're waiting on them to step out because most likely you're not going to, you know, spot and stalk this time of year.
Now, the question becomes, and let's stick on the whitetails out there. Are they sticking pretty tight to where they're bedding throughout the entire day, or are they actually moving a long ways to get to food and water and then back to bed?
This time of year, they don't move much at all. They move, you know, they step out on the edge of a cornfield. They may walk a few hundred yards to water. And yeah, I just don't, they just don't travel. I mean, they travel more out here probably than they do where you're at, but they still don't, they still don't travel a whole lot. I feel like most of the time a half a mile max, that's probably more than they're moving in your neck of the woods, but out here it's flat enough that they may like say the corner of a cornfield and they need to drop into a draw and travel a little ways to get to a water source or something, but they don't travel a lot. They're lazy this time of year. As you know, they are building up as much nutrients and whatnot to get ready for the rut. It's just around the corner. They're getting ready to shed velvet. In fact, a few of them already have.
Oh, really?
So anyway, yeah, I've seen a buck already like shed.
Oh, nice. So, yeah. Nice. That would get me fired up. And that seems, early for,
it is.
For that to me.
Typically it's definitely like first week of September at the earliest. And I've already seen one hardhorn. So,
So, just out of a random curiosity, when does your season start?
So September 5 is youth. And then just after that, I think the 12th or the 15th, right around in there is when muzzleloader starts, which we can archery hunt during that time. We just have to wear orange.
Yeah.
And that goes for a couple of weeks. And then basically it's just archery season from, you know, early, very late September or early October all the way through, when rifle season starts, which is like the first week in December.
Have you ever ran into a scenario where you had some deer holding velvet long enough to potentially hunt them with velvet?
Oh yeah. Yes, for sure.
Okay. I don't just curious of that. So what about the mule deer this time of year? What's the range in a Western Kansas mule deer looking like?
Yeah, they roam more than a whitetail. Whitetail is a homebody. They like their pattern. They like their couple of exit routes, and they just stick to what they know. A mule deer, I might see a mule deer in a Milo field, just in an open random crop field, and be able to hunt him in September. But then in the rut, he may be pushing does. We've honestly seen the same deer like 8 to 10 miles away. And we've confirmed that because I've got friends, you know, that far south, and, you know, we will share photos and talk, and we're like, holy cow, that mule deer was pushing does down here in this area. And, you know, it's hard to believe, and some people don't understand it, but they're more of a migratory animal than people realize.
And so it becomes, is it possible to pattern a mule deer, a mule deer buck specifically?
This time of year, yes. I think they have a comfort zone when it comes to like where they're bedding during the summertime. And I think it's just food and water. And they're not moving much. Same deal. They're storing nutrients for the rut. And so once the crops come out or the velvet falls off, they kind of become a different animal, as you know. It's mule deer and whitetail. They kind of go into a different mode of their fall. But you can pattern them to a point until it's time for them to decide, you know what, I'm going to go move to a different area, and I'm going to start scent checking, you know, this is my normal rutting area down, you know, 5 miles south of here or whatever it is. It's really weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know you've already answered some of this, but I want you to elaborate a little bit on some of you live in such, I'm so jealous of the people who can hunt both, right? Or who get to choose to hunt whatever they want. Talk to me a little bit about the similarities between a mule deer buck and a whitetail buck, and then also their differences.
I could talk about a lot of differences.
Okay.
It's hard to find similarities. So the differences is a whitetail buck is very aggressive, and he is going to stand his ground way more than a mule deer. And I'm not saying that a mule deer won't stand his ground, because they will, and if they see a buck approaching. But if I approach a whitetail buck that's bedded with a doe, and he knows that she's getting ready to breed, and if I grunt at him, say 80 yards away, he may, depending on if he feels like I'm in his bubble or not, he's going to get up and he's going to come in and he's going to stomp me off because he knows he's the king. A mule deer, if they see, you know, I use decoys a lot, and if they see a mule deer buck decoy at that 80 yards away, as long as he doesn't feel like I'm a threat, he's completely fine with it. And if he does get up and feel like I'm a threat, he's going to work to circle his does, and he's going to take his whole herd away. And I've actually seen that same behavior with elk as well. Sometimes they want to just keep their herd to themselves, and they just want to go away. They don't want confrontation as much.
Yeah.
Not saying they won't fight. They just don't want to fight.
Yeah.
A whitetail, they're mad at the world.
Yeah.
And it doesn't take much to make one mad. And if I go challenge one, 80% of the time he's going to come in and he's going to try to stop me.
Yeah.
So those are the big differences that I see. Also, a whitetail, they like to really take their one doe that they're in love with away from the rest of the herd, and they want to be left alone. A mule deer, they want to gather as many deer as possible, mostly does, of course, and they want to breed them all at the same time. Yeah. I've seen them hop from one to the next multiple times, and a whitetail, they just seclude themselves. Yeah. You know, they just act completely different. I feel like a whitetail will push away a mature whitetail buck will push away a mature mule deer buck, because I've seen, you know, because I have it live in that area where they can both be rutting in the same area, and I've seen it. A whitetail buck doesn't want anyone around at all. So
Yeah. One of the coolest things I've ever witnessed from a tree stand. One year I had the water came in early spring and flooded out this river bottom, right? The crops were already in it, and it was too wet, and the farmer just did not replant, but it was fertilized, which is, you know, they put the anhydrous on before, then they fertilized it, and then the rain came, dude, and we're talking about 10 foot high grass. It was crazy. So I climb up in this tree stand to where I can look over top of this sea of grass, and weeds and like thistle and just gnarly. And I watched I was just glassing and I saw a bedded doe and then next to her, a good bedded buck. And so I got in the tree stand about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And the rest of that day, all I watched was young bucks get downwind, work their way up, a whitetail buck stand up, like ears back posture, drive them off, and maybe even jump at them a little bit, maybe chase them, then turn around and come back to that bedded doe. And he did that for like 5 straight hours. So all day he was fighting off that. And so I thought that was one of the coolest things I've ever seen. And then he stood up. I can't remember if I actually witnessed him breed her, but wherever she went, he went. Like, and I was hoping she was going to come towards me, but she ended up not doing that. But so with that said, that was cool to see. When you're hunting mule deer, talk to me a little bit about mule deer behavior during the rut.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of times how I find them is that they like to be in somewhat of an open area to where they can keep tabs on their herd all the time. They don't like to have a lot of brokenness. So like cliffy stuff, they don't like tall crops. They like to just know that they can see all their ladies and they know exactly where everybody's at. So what I'm doing is, of course, I'm just covering ground because a lot of times, especially in the basically all of November.
Yeah.
I'm covering a bunch of ground and I'm finding just one mule deer. I don't care if it's a doe or a buck, because when you find one, especially during that rut time, you're just waiting for, you know, you're looking for the rest of the herd. So like if you find one doe that stands up and stretches and repositions and beds, of course, if they're all bedded, you can cover a bunch of ground and you may not pick them out of a, you know, a cut cornfield or whatever they're bedding in. And so I'm just looking for a deer and then I'm stopping. I'm spending at least 30 minutes, if not an hour, with binoculars on a tripod standing in the back of my truck or on a hill or whatever vantage point I can get. And I'm trying to find if there's a mature buck in there and if he's one that I'm wanting to spend time on.
Yeah.
So that's my tactic on mule deer is just covering ground, going from herd to herd, trying to figure out if there's a buck that I want to target.
Gotcha. And does that become difficult to get inside their bubble with a bow in the rut for a mule deer I caught the tail end of a mule deer rut. I went and hunted South Dakota after the gun season. I didn't fill my tag in the archery season, so I went back after the gun season was over, and I went chasing them again, and I saw some rut behavior. But I also know that when the sun came up, they were on their feet a lot longer. The bucks very rarely bedded down in that period of time, and if they did bed down, they would maybe just take a quick rest and then stand right back up. And it just seemed like more deer were on their feet for longer periods of time throughout that period. How do you then creep in during that November timeframe or during that rut timeframe to put yourself in a position to shoot them, knowing that the terrain is flat, knowing that there's going to be more eyes on you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a chess match. I mean, there's been times where I'll have a spot picked out that I know that I need to get to. It could be a corner post. It could be, you know, a little clump of grass or yucca plant or something like that. And it might take me an hour to get there, but then I'll be, you know, chin on the ground, just waiting for the next move. Maybe they're going to get up and reposition and allow me, you know, maybe they're going to bed facing away at that point in time. And then that'll allow me to slip in a little bit further. And so it's basically you make your move, you go as far as you can. And if it's not within range, you're waiting for them to make the next move so that it allows you to do something different. Yeah. I'm a big decoy guy. I like handheld decoys. I use heads up decoys specifically. There's others out there. I get within 80 yards and I'm using a doe decoy, because back to the comment that I made about if you're approaching with a buck decoy, I've seen more times than not where they're going to push that herd away from you if you have a buck decoy. If you have a doe decoy, they're thinking, huh, who's this new doe in the area? I want to bring her into my herd. I want to scent check her to see if there's something I'm missing here. And so even if he stands up and sees you and doesn't come immediately, I guarantee you it's in his mind. And when he decides it's ready, he's ready, he's going to eventually make his way over to you. And I've even seen him get up, get all of his does up, push the whole herd to me, because that's how he's welcoming me into the herd. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting how the herd behavior happens on mule deer compared to a whitetail situation where I'm taking a buck in to challenge.
Yeah. So. Just, and I mean, you only know that from being able to observe enough time saying, dude, buck decoy is no good in this scenario where the only thing, and time of year matters too, right? I mean, like it's the rut. What does the mule deer buck want to do? He wants to breed. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't want to, knowing that he pushes his does off to away from me, I want to use the doe decoy.
Yeah. I have a situation. Sorry to interrupt you.
No, go ahead. Go for it.
At the end of last season, or it was two seasons ago, it was late season. I hadn't filled my tag. It was after rifle season. And I went out and I just had like, I think 2 days left in the archery season, but they were still doing some, no, I'm sorry. This was a couple days before rifle season started. And I felt pressure that I needed to get it done before rifle season started. Anyway, a situation was happening where I was in a perfect situation. I was out in the middle of a field. There was like, it was a cut crop field, but there was trails through it that I knew that the deer were taking to kind of cut across the field to get to a water hole. Anyway, I was just out there in the middle of a field, a little bit of cover, but I knew I was in the right spot. Anyway, I had the decoy with me. That's what I was using as cover. That's what I was using as my way of being there. Anyway, here comes a doe walking down the trail. Here comes a mature buck behind her. For whatever reason, I decided, you know what? I want to challenge a mule deer today. And I took a buck decoy out with me. And had I had the doe decoy, that deer would be dead. And he basically came up, the doe stopped at 50 yards. He was right behind her. He ran up and nosed her away completely to take an alternate route, a detour all the way around me. And I never got a shot because he just didn't want to, he didn't want confrontation.
Yeah.
If I would have had the doe decoy, they would have continued straight down the trail directly at me, and I would have had to shoot him in self-defense, basically just coming up to scent check, probably, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Just, I've had situations where I'm like, why did I do that? You know? So anyway,
that's crazy, man. And I like the word confrontation that you used, because you will, for mule deer, it sounds like you want to avoid it. And for whitetails, it works for you.
I take advantage of their frustrations or their testosterone, but mule deer, they're just built different.
Yeah, for sure. Now, how are you walk us through the decoying process for a whitetail buck if you locate one, whether they're with a doe or without one?
Sure. If they're with a doe, it's almost a slam dunk, because
really,
as long as he doesn't. Yeah.
I would think the opposite.
I'll tell you why, because back to the story where you were sitting in a tree stand when the wind was, when every deer you seen would approach that mature buck and doe downwind because they were obviously cruising. They obviously caught wind of a doe that was in heat, and they obviously circled with their nose in the wind, walking straight to that doe in heat. That's what they do. Well, when the buck is on that downwind side of that doe at all times, because he knows where the other bucks are approaching from. Well, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to take a buck decoy and I'm going to approach from the downwind side because he's expecting me. And he's expecting to run off deer all day, every day, because that's what they do during the rut. They don't eat. All they do is defend their territory. They fight until it's time to breed, and they breed, and then they move on to the next one. That's just their cycle. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to come in downwind, and I'm going to crawl as far as I can. I'm going to try to get in the bubble that I call it, and their bubble, it could be 80 yards. I've seen a deer get so mad at 100 yards that they walk that full 100 yards to me. And then they think they're just going to run right back to their doe. Then I've seen one that they're like, he's far enough away. I feel comfortable. Even though I don't like it, I'm not going to get up and go stomp him off.
Yeah.
So sometimes it takes me getting to 40 yards.
Yeah.
But when I get there and I try different distances and I try to, you know, I'm grunting and I'm snort wheezing with the decoy up on my way in.
Yeah.
And until it trips them. And then ears are laid back and they're coming to run me off. Mm-hmm. So that's, I just keep heckling them until they just can't handle it.
So how do you manage keeping that decoy up, drawing back when they start to come, and then executing the shot? How do you make all that work?
So they make bow mounted, the decoy that I run can be mounted to the bow.
Okay.
I don't like doing that because the Western Kansas winds can get pretty hectic, and trying to shoot even at 20 yards with a bow jumping all over the place is not good. So what I've done is I've developed my own little stake system where you can slide that in, clamp it down, and then just push it in the ground with like a steel rod basically. And mm-hmm. it's like a monopod basically. You just stick in the ground anyway. I'll stick that in the ground, and if it's nasty enough wind, I'll kind of try to support it with my hand until I'm ready to draw or whatever. But hopefully it's decent enough wind that I can still be behind it. So hands free, both hands on the bow. I'm basically using it as a ground blind at that point in time. It's got, you know, it's up about the same natural height as a deer would be. Hopefully there's a little bit of taller grass to where it kind of blends everything like a deer naturally would be standing in taller grass.
Yeah.
But I'm basically just, my head level is below the back line of what the buck back line would be. And I'm just hunkered down underneath that thing. Yeah. And I'm sticking in the ground. I'm hands free. I'm grunting. I'm snort wheezing. I'm doing everything I can to try to coax that thing up to my direction. Yeah.
Yeah. Knowing that deer use their nose to try to get downwind to you potentially even yet. How do you have to move when are these bucks straight lining you? Like, are they coming in straight line to get you off, or are they trying to like half circle you to also get behind you as well?
Most of the time they're going to come straight in because their goal is to get you out of there.
Yeah.
And they know that it's a long ways around to get your wind, and they're putting you in between him and the doe. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't want that. He wants to stay on between us.
Yeah.
And so most times he's not going downwind. I mean, he may try to like barely angle around. Like, of course he's going to want to try to get my wind eventually. And I think they definitely will eventually, but when they try to circle, even if I decide I'm not going to shoot a deer, you know, because this has happened multiple times on bucks that I just didn't care to shoot, they will come within 10 or 15 yards and they will circle downwind, and they'll be right in your lap the whole time, but they will go to your downwind side.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. And then when it comes to the like decoying, what happens if a doe sees you first? Like, if the doe stands up, do they get spooked with another buck there?
No.
No.
No. You have your one-off times where a doe will act funny, but it's back to they're so used to the rut activity and other bucks approaching. They're so used to that. They see it all day, every day during the rut. They pay no attention.
Yeah.
I've seen them stand up, feed, reposition, bed, and all while I'm within 40 yards.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's interesting. And so talk to me a little bit in maybe both those scenarios with a mule deer doe and a whitetail buck. What are some no-nos when you're trying to use a mobile decoy to not only get yourself closer to them, but like the patience and all that stuff?
It's if they happen to catch you while you're going in and you haven't gotten the decoy up, don't be abrupt with it. Don't just throw it up unnaturally. Sometimes it's better to just hit the ground, get your chin on the ground, try to let them dismiss you. If they happen to turn their head and start walking away a little bit nervous, I have eased that decoy up as absolute slow as I can. And a lot of times they kind of turn around and they're like, huh, like that's what was happening. And a lot of times they'll come back to you and just kind of start, you know, looking like does do and trying to figure out what's going on. And most of the time they're going to dismiss you. Mule deer, the does, a lot of times they just accept you as part of the herd. Sometimes you'll have like a young buck that'll try to circle downwind. And I think with a mule deer doe decoy, that's probably my biggest concern is if a lot of times there's going to be a young buck with the herd. And of course, he's going to be staying far enough away not to get his tail whipped, but he's going to be around and he's going to try to get, you know, what leftovers he can. It sounds funny that way, but he'll always just be just far enough away, but just close enough to kind of see what's going on. And so you're always going to have those little pesky young bucks that kind of try to come in downwind and scent check that doe decoy.
Yeah.
And they're going to blow, they're going to jump, they're going to, once they get your wind, they're going to create a little bit of a scene. And so that's where I always go back to, you know, making sure that my release is clipped on my D loop and I'm ready. That doe is, or that decoy is stuck in the ground on my stake that I'm telling you about. And I'm ready to basically full draw in case that buck does stand up. Sometimes you can just shoot them right there, you know, if you're close enough. If they're not close enough, you're just praying that that whole herd doesn't get up and get freaked out enough about the reaction that the little buck has, that it's going to take the whole herd away for a little bit.
Yeah.
But if that happens, I've let them kind of reset, give it an hour or two, slip in a different angle, and you're back in the game because they just think you're another deer.
Yeah, man, that's gnarly that you've had that much success with that and have found that little niche that works. Does decoying work the same outside of the rut, like either a late season or early season for you as well?
As far as bringing them in,
or no. Just get using a decoy to get close enough, whatever that may be, to get within a shot.
I think that it would be very beneficial. I know it's very beneficial to have that doe decoy with you, like on mule deer specifically.
Yeah.
To have that doe decoy with you, even this time of year when it's, you know, say first of the season in September, just having it with you and just kind of have it in your hand to where, like, if you're walking in, if say you know that there's a buck that's normally stepping out on the corner of this field, and say there could be a doe or two that could blow or ruin the party or whatever, I'm going to just have that decoy with me to where if I can just hit a knee and just kind of raise that thing up, it just kind of calms everybody down.
Okay.
You know, it just, they hear things. And a lot of times deer don't know what noises are and they're just going to investigate. And if they see that there's another deer, they're going to dismiss the whole deal.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay. Very interesting, man. Like, I feel like the next time I go out west, I want to push my hunts back from early October to right before the gun season and maybe give this decoying thing a try, because I've heard a lot. You're not the first guy who's told me or has figured some of this stuff out, but it's very intriguing to me. It's basically using their weaknesses against them. And not just trying to be as quiet as possible and sneak up on them, you know, when they're in the shade or something like that, you know?
Yeah. And decoying is not for everybody. Some people may not want to use that tactic mm-hmm. or feel right about using that tactic or whatever. I mean, everyone's got their own way of hunting. And if you want to just be a ninja and sneak in between their ears, you know, and wait for them to stand up, like that's really cool too. You know, yeah. No big deal.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Absolutely. What kind of shot range do you expect every single year, or what are you prepared for?
I'm prepared for anything because out west you have wide open spaces, and I practice at long ranges all the time. I have 120 yards in my backyard that's protected with trees, and you know, I'm practicing at long range thinking that if I have to take a shot that's half that far, 60 or whatever, I feel really good about it. And yeah. And I mean that, like I spend so much time dialing in my equipment. I have all my own bow equipment, a press. I have, you know, I build my own arrows, and I'm doing everything to the nth degree to make sure that my accuracy is first and foremost. And so that's how I prepare. I expect to take close shots, Dan. Like with this decoy situation, both whitetail and mule deer, most of my shots are inside 20.
Woo!
And yeah, I mean, if it's going to happen, it happens. Like, it's awesome.
Dude, that's
if you're
crazy.
Patient enough. Yeah. Last year, the mule deer that I shot ended up being 30, but I had him dead to rights. I knew that as soon as he stood up, like, I knew the exact yardage because I was able to range him, you know, an antler while he was laying in the Milo field. And as soon as he stood up, I had my, you know, pin already there ready to go. So that's I didn't crazy. Give him a whole lot of time.
Yeah. Yeah. So the last time we talked, I think this was in the wake of you killing a really big whitetail buck back in the day. And I think you were talking about the importance of pivots at this point, and a pivot being like at some point throughout the course of a year, the deer kind of gravitate to these pivot fields. Is that still the case?
So like irrigation and pivots, is that what you're saying? Yeah. I mean, irrigation is important this time of year because of course the sprinklers are running throughout the summer. Water is a rare resource. And so of course it attracts the animals. And so, you know, I'm looking and I have a lot of cameras around pivots. Of course you got to stay away, you know, so they're not getting soaking wet all the time, but like on the edges of those fields, you know, if there happens to be a drainage that, you know, touches, like say the corner of the field is a natural drainage with some nice prairie grass or whatever, and it's a natural funnel out of that field, then that's a good spot for a trail camera setup.
Right.
But as soon as those crop fields are cut, the pivots really don't, I mean, they shut off and it's just another field.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Okay. Interesting. What else do we need to know about plain, like the crossover area and the style of hunt that you use? Have you ever been in a scenario where you're hunting mule deer out of a tree stand?
I've encountered really good mule deer out of a tree stand. I don't tree stand hunt that much anymore.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why, because I used to only tree stand hunt. Even though we don't have that many trees, I was able to find drainages that would have a few trees. And of course you're going to find deer because there's just whitetails, especially love trees and drainages and water and creeks and whatnot. Yep. So anytime you find those, even out here, there's going to be deer. But most of the time your pictures are going to be at night. Most of the time out here, the mature bucks are not going to be hanging out with the herds. Mm-hmm. Mature bucks are pretty reclusive until the rut. And then all of a sudden they start coming in and spend a little more time where the herds are at, especially the doe groups, the doe bedding areas. When I used to tree stand hunt, I was successful, but I was shooting bucks that weren't the most mature bucks. And I was shooting the bucks that were cruising more than the mature bucks.
Yeah.
Of course, you're going to have a 2 and 3 year old roll through because they got kicked off of that buck or that buck. And so they're off to the next. And, you know, I'm getting shots at good bucks, but not great bucks.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I started realizing that those most mature bucks were out away from all the trees, they've taken that doe out away from all those drainages, out into the middle of a field or into a pasture, into a CRP field or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And when I decided I would hunt more with my glass or by covering ground, you know, in a vehicle, jumping up on a vantage point and glassing, I started my big buck harvest success percentage went way up.
Yeah.
Because I was going to the mature bucks. I would find them and I would go to them with a decoy or sneak in or whatever. So I started shooting those 5, 6, 7 year old bucks consistently once I kind of changed away from tree stands. Yeah. Not saying that I don't love tree stand hunting, because to be honest with you, I enjoy sitting in nature and the peace of it. And there's something awesome about it.
Yeah.
But as far as shooting the most mature bucks, a lot of times you and I, or all of us really don't have as much time to dedicate the whole month of November for the opportunity for that one or two times that big 6 year old might walk by between does. I have to take advantage of my week.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to those, you know?
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. One of the last questions I have for you here today is, talk to me a little bit about why you love Western Kansas as a, as a hunting destination and where you live.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's wide open and I like it because it's not looked at as a premier hunting area.
Yeah.
And I will tell you, it's not for everybody, because there's been a lot of people that come out here and they get frustrated quickly because the deer numbers are not here.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to find them. It's hard to find mature deer.
Yeah.
And because of me living here all my life, knowing exactly the secrets and the little things that you know, you need to have in order
you have that experience. Yeah.
Yes, the experience for sure. For someone out of state or out of area to come here and try to dedicate 5 or 7 days and think they're going to just see mature buck left and right, it's not happening.
Yeah.
You just, it might take me all year with trail cameras to locate a deer that I'm interested in. And in fact, last year, until the day that I killed my mule deer, which I never knew about until the rut, I didn't have a deer to go after. And I had been at it since July.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not easy. It's tough.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I love it because of that, Dan, because it's not, you know, I feel like when I find a mature buck, he's in trouble. And that's going to sound a little arrogant. But I just know their characteristics and I know their tendencies. And once I find them, I feel like 80% of the battle is won already.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, especially if you've had the success that you've had over the course of the years where you've really cultivated your strategy and it started paying dividends for you. Right. And so why not keep doing it? And so, you know, everybody, you know, some guy's biggest hurdle might be the amount of time it takes to sit in a tree. Others, the time it takes to locate. Others, the, you know, what buck should I shoot? You know, maybe it's not a time thing. It's a decision thing. So,
yeah.
I don't know. I just always find that part of the United States really interesting, man. Like, it's so cool for me.
Yeah.
Like Western South Dakota, South Dakota, Western South Dakota, Western Nebraska. And the cool part about this is I don't know about, I've never been to the area where you live. But out in Western Nebraska, there's all this flat Nebraskan ground. And then all of a sudden you'll come over this hill and it's just like a giant cliff drops off. Do you have that kind of stuff where you're at?
Occasionally. Yeah. There are some rugged pastures and areas. I mean, there are some limestone cut, nasty, you know, places in the earth where Mother Nature cut just a nasty trail through, you know? Yes.
Yep.
But they're few and far between.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. Yep. Well, man, I always look forward to seeing what you shoot every year. And, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to hop on and catch up and chat with us, man. So good luck this upcoming season, man.
I really appreciate it. Yeah. I always enjoy chatting with you, Dan, and, don't be a stranger.
Yeah, absolutely.